Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 334. In this episode, we're continuing our journey through the fall of Numenor by considering the state of dwarfdom at the beginning of the Second Age, as well as the death of Numenor's first king. Before we get started, I'd like to give a double up air five to our amazing fellowship. Stick 'em up, fellowship. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsht. Boom. Nice. Felt it coming at me. Thank you. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Melkor27, and our newest patron and executive producer, KG. KG, thank you so much for your generous support to us. We really appreciate it. Also, a shout-out to those celebrating their fellowship anniversary in April and May of 2023. Now, I normally just do one month at a time, but we're here in May, and I only did one episode in April, so I kind of feel bad for the April folks. Y'all got a good one. It was the Easter episode, but I thought I'd include you all for a couple more episodes just to make up for the fact that you weren't on as many as most usually are. So let's do that. Jonathan D., Julia, KDP, Rebecca R., Ty M., and then we get into May, John H., Michael W., Malcolm C. Thank you all so much for your very, very generous support over the last year, and in some cases, years. We truly appreciate you here at the Tolkien Road. Join the Fellowship of the Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. When you join the Fellowship of the Road, it helps us to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way. Learn more at patreon.com/Tolkien Road. YouTube, hit that like button. Hit it. Hit it. Actually, just hit it once, because if you hit it twice, it'll take away the like. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. All right. Well, one more thing. I was recently on a live stream with the guys from theonering.com, as well as a few other folks. We had a great time arguing about all things Tolkien, and I hope to be a part of their live streams on a regular basis going forward. So definitely, definitely check that out. So it was a lot of fun, and you're going to learn about some new, really cool new people who are doing podcasts and such about Tolkien, so you definitely want to give that a look-see. All right, well, let's look at the Fall of Numenor. So we're going to be checking out a couple of sections of the Fall of Numenor this week, because really these next few sections are pretty darn short. All right, so hopefully you've got your copy of this book by now. It's a really valuable resource for understanding the whole of the Second Age. Great resource that's been given to us and compiled by Brian Sibley. So we start off this episode after having considered a lot about kind of the nature of Numenor as a place and the people of Numenor. You know, the last several episodes really delved into what it was like to live in Numenor. Like, if you had just been an average person living in Numenor, what would it have been like? Well, we get in, we've gotten past that now, and so we get to this year 40 of the Second Age. And the line here is, many dwarves leaving their old cities in Ered Luin go to Moria and swell its numbers. And we get this little passage. I'm going to read a little bit of this from the first paragraph here. Durin is the name that the dwarves used for the eldest of the seven fathers of their race and the ancestor of all the kings of the Longbeards. He slept alone until in the deeps of time and the awakening of that people he came to Azanulbazar, and in the caves about Kelid-Zarim in the east of the Misty Mountains he made his dwelling, where afterwards were the mines of Moria, renowned in song. There he lived so long that he was known far and wide as Durin the Deathless. Yet in the end he died before the elder days had passed, and his tomb was in Khazad-dûm. But his line never failed, and five times his heir was born in his house, so like to his forefather that he received the name of Durin. He was indeed held by the dwarves to be the deathless that returned, for they have many strange tales and beliefs concerning themselves and their fate in the world. So this is from Lord of the Rings, Appendix A. This is lifted from there. And, you know, if you want to know, if you're just you're just one of these people who wants to know everything you can about the dwarves of Middle-earth, you need to read Lord of the Rings, Appendix A. There's a really great section as part of Appendix A, and it's on Durin's folk. And it's several pages of small print long. You get a great little get a great little family tree in there, if you can see that, that descends all through all through the different kings of the dwarves. And it includes some, you know, names that you'll probably recognize in there as well. So it's a great appendix. It's a great read if you're just into the history of the dwarves and want to know as much about them as possible. Obviously, you know, they're one of those people that probably a lot of us would have liked a lot more written about them, but it's just one of those things that Tolkien didn't necessarily get around to, but there's still a good bit out there. So yeah, really the important things to take away, here is that Moria became the center of dwarf culture in the Second Age. It was on the west side of Moria that the elvish realm of Eregion would spring up. Okay, so, and this was, you know, this is important because it's out of this friendship, right, between these dwarves of Moria and these elves of Eregion that the rings of power are going to arise. Okay, so these two cultures play a very important role. And it's also interesting because historically, before this and even afterwards, the elves and the dwarves just in general were not very friendly with one another. But for kind of a little golden age here involving Moria and the Second Age, there was a friendship and even a sense of you know, shared purpose going on between these two peoples here. The name Khazad-dûm is really interesting. It means dwarves' mansion in the secret language of the dwarves. So Khazad-dûm is the name that the dwarves give for this realm, the realm that we all know well from Fellowship, right? From Fellowship of the Ring. Of course, in that period of time, it's been essentially destroyed. It's been attacked, and the dwarves that once dwelt there are no longer dwelling there. Balin, of course, was one of the dwarves who led that expedition to reclaim this area, and it was reclaimed for a short period of time, but Balrog comes along, wah-wah. All right, so Khazad-dûm, yeah, the dwarves' mansion in the secret language of the dwarves. Moria is the name that you're probably even more familiar with. Moria is a Sindarin term meaning dark chasm. So we can see that one of these names was originally derogatory, right? Khazad-dûm, Dwarves Mansion, Moria, Dark Chasm, not such a nice name, right? You know, you think, I'm living in my mansion. Other people think, you're living in that dark chasm. So you can see that the original Sindarin name, and you kind of get from there that this is, you know, since it's an Elvish language, you get this sense that, you know, there is this animosity between the elves and the dwarves just from the name Moria alone, if you know the history of it. And that's just one of the magical things about Tolkien's writing style, right? He packs every word with so much meaning, especially if they're words that he creates. It's got like its own, you know, history associated with it. There's a note about Gloin that's included here, and it says, you know, the implication with this, and this is actually just kind of summarizing something that was said in the Fellowship of the Ring by Gloin. Gloin, of course, being one of the dwarves from the Hobbit, and then he's also the father of Gimli. And what's with this note, the implication is that Sauron manipulated the dwarves to return to Moria as a trap to weaken their presence at Erebor. And, you know, one of the things that if you're just kind of familiar with the movies, you probably didn't, you know, it's probably not as solid in a lot of people's minds that, hey, part of what Sauron was trying to do at the end of the Third Age was not only attack Minas Tirith and Gondor, but he also had sent forces north to attack the men of, to attack Dale and to attack Erebor, the Lonely Mountain, which in that time, both of those places had been reclaimed after Smaug was defeated. So the thought here is that that what Gloin in this note is alluding to, and I'll go ahead and read what's here. Gloin said, it is now many years ago that a shadow of disquiet fell upon our people. Whence it came, we did not at first perceive. Words began to be whispered in secret. It was said that we were hemmed in a narrow place, and the greater wealth and splendor would be found in a wider world. Some spoke of Moria, the mighty works of our fathers that are called in our own tongue Khazad-dûm, and they declared that now at last we had the power and numbers to return. So the shadow of disquiet, you know, whenever you see the shadow, it makes you think of either Melkor or it makes you think of Sauron. It's by Gloin using that term here, the shadow of disquiet, as being something that kind of eventually spurred the dwarves of Erebor to send an expedition and reclaim Moria. It really does make you think that maybe it was Sauron kind of baiting them into a trap, that he knew that the Balrog was there And that's why he wanted some of them to return there, so he could defeat some of them with the Balrog, and then Erebor would be less powerful at that point. It would be easier for him to attack with a frontal assault. So, interesting little tidbit there. Again, you know, just, wow. I mean, Tolkien, just such a masterful storyteller, masterful at creating this legendarium and mythology. And again, you can learn a lot more about the dwarves by reading Appendix A. We did an episode on Appendix A and Durin's Folk a few years ago. You can go back and find that one, and maybe we'll dive into that one again in the not too distant future. All right. So very short section there. We're going to go ahead and continue on to year 442. So jumping ahead 402 years on the timeline. And this is the death of the first king of Numenor, Elros, the brother of Elrond. So you'll remember Elros was the was one of the two sons of Elwing and Eärendil, the other being Elrond. Elrond and Elros were half-elven, so they had a choice to make. Do they want to join their fates to the fate of the elves, or do they want to join their fate to the fate of men? Elros chose men, Elrond chose elves. That's why Elrond is around at the end of the Third Age, about 6,000 years after he was born, and Elrond is not, or Elros is not. Elros dies in the year 442. But Elros, nevertheless, lived a very long period of time. This passage that's quoted here is, and really I believe most of the rest of what we're going to read here with year 442 is from Unfinished Tales. Elros's reign was a 410-year reign. He began reigning in the year 32 of the Second Age, when Numenor was kind of officially declared as this kingdom. He was born in the year First Age 532, and the last year of the First Age was 590. So you do that math, and he was 500 years old when he died, right? So it's 58 years in the First Age, and then 442 years in the Second Age. So he lived to be exactly 500 years old. Now, again, remember that special lifespan that was given to the people of Numenor, and especially to those who were directly descended from Elros. The ones from Elros had an even longer lifespan than three times the normal. So it was like three times the normal lifespan of men for the people of Numenor, and then the people of directly descended from Elros had an even longer lifespan, typically, closer to 500 years. So that's why they lived. I mean, that's just, to me, that's always one of those interesting things to think about, right? You know, most of us would be lucky to live to 100 years old, even in the modern age, with all of our medical technology and all the ways that we're able to, take better care of ourselves. I think the average life expectancy, here in the U.S. for, just kind of round numbers, because I don't know it off the top of my head, but we'll just say 75. I think that's a little optimistic, actually. That's the average life expectancy. I mean, 500 years, think about that. So that's basically, 6 2/3 times the normal lifespan. And what's really cool about it is it's not like, they live the normal, kind of time of maturity, and then they're just old for 400 years. They basically live most of that is like your best years, right? It's like, those kind of 20 to 40, that like span of 20 to 40 when you're in, prime physical condition, the best physical condition you're ever going to be in. Don't have any of this little gray going on in the beard too much, like I do. And so you're living in those prime years. So just think about that, right? Imagine if your 20 to 40 was actually 20 to 400, right? How cool would that be? I mean, there's just so much you would be able to accomplish. It would completely change your psychology, your outlook on life. But maybe there would be some bad things associated with that, right? Because, it's not maybe the natural lifespan that you were supposed to have originally. It's just hard to understand because, I suppose if you're living around a bunch of people that maybe live, your generation lives the same period of amount of time you would, that'd be pretty cool. But if you're living around a bunch of people where you're outliving all these people and then you outlive their descendants and then their descendants, it's kind of like, imagine 500 years old. Gosh, if I was 500 years old right now, that means I was born in the year 1523. Like, we're talking the new world just discovered by, you know, Europeans, that imagine like everything that you've seen in that span of time. Wow. That's mind blowing. And maybe not all of it's so good. So I don't know, maybe we want to go back and forth on whether it would really be such a good thing to live for 500 years, but all things considered, Elros was living most of this time in Numenor, closest thing that men are going to get to to an earthly paradise. So I'd say Elros had it pretty good. The name, so you see Death of Elros Tar-Minyatur. The name Tar-Minyatur was a Quenya title, right? So remember we talked about how Quenya was like the ceremonial language of Numenor, and Quenya is the High Elvish tongue, right? It's the, it's the language of the Blessed Realm. Tar-Minyatur was the Quenya title given to Elros. Each of the kings for a while in Numenor will have the title Tar, as being like signifying that they're the ruler. So Tar means is a word that means high or king, and then Minyatur means first lord or first ruler, right? The Numenorians were unwearied for thrice the span of mortal men, but to Elros the longest life was given, and to his descendants. This did not wane until the coming of the Shadow. So it was only much later in the history of Numenor that the Shadow starts to have an effect on Numenor, and their lifespan starts to wane. Here's my question. All right, so we got an image here, and I believe it's supposed to be Elros on after he's died, maybe lying in state or in the tomb, the tombs of the kings. He appears to have a beard here, but I don't know if that's more of a decorative like beard, and kind of like they put this helmet on him and it just happened to have a beard. But I don't think the kings of Numenor should have beards at this age. I know that they shouldn't at a younger age, but I'm not sure about a later age, because I've heard that there was a controversy at one point about Círdan being portrayed with a beard as an elf, because elves aren't supposed to have that kind of facial hair. But there was a thought that because he was so old that even Tolkien had allowed that once an elf reaches a certain age that, in kind of an elf's, because elves do age, right? They like, and that we won't get into that right now. But if you read the Nature of Middle Earth, they do actually age. They age in accord with this world, right? Because they're immortal, but their lifespan is attached to this world. And, in Tolkien's mind, this world has a beginning and it has an end. We don't know when that end will be, but there is a definite end to it. So is it possible here that in their later years, as they die, that the kings of Numenor would, or as they get older and closer to death, maybe in their elderly years, the kings would grow beards. Maybe that's possible because the elves would, and they have that elvish blood. And the whole reason they didn't grow beards when they're younger is because they have the elvish blood, so they wouldn't, it's kind of like the DNA doesn't allow for it. So anyway, just an interesting question. I don't know if you've got thoughts on that. Love to hear them in the comments below. Elros had four children, three sons and one daughter. All right. Tar-Vardimir was the eldest of his children. And here's the thing. Tar-Vardimir did not really rule as the king of Numenor for any meaningful period of time. In fact, it says that he ruled for 1 year, but that's more of just a ceremonial thing. And really, the idea here is that Tar-Vardimir was already so old when he was supposed to take the throne when Elros died, it was really kind of like a moot point, right? He was kind of like, I don't have much longer, right? So why should I take up those years in my elderly years? I think that's actually kind of a decent thought process. Just a general comment I'll make is, I like the idea of people who are not elderly, being rulers. And, look, I'll be elderly one day, and it's no disrespect to some people who are elderly. But I don't necessarily have a solid number at which I draw that line. But, a ruler in my mind should be someone who's vigorous, right? Who has, is in kind of maybe not those 20 to 40 years prime of their life, although there's no reason they couldn't be, but, maybe like 20 to 20 to 60, like, really kind of seems like that, you know, in our normal years, kind of seems like that, that sweet spot in my mind. Maybe you could say up to 65, maybe some people would push it up to 70, but I think once you're past 70, it's kind of like, I mean, that's just generally thought of as your retirement years. And that doesn't mean that you have to be useless and not do anything, but it just means that, like, you know, what if we lived in a world where people were more like, yeah, I'm reached this age where maybe I need to be an advisor to someone who's younger, but not trying to rule myself. And, you know, but what we see here with Tar Vardamir kind of willingly saying, I don't need to be the ruler, is establishing this precedent that's really beautiful, of saying, like, I am not going to kind of hold on to power until I die, until the day that I die. Instead, I'm going to pass on power to my son while I'm still alive, so that everybody can see that that natural handover happens. We'll come back to that in just a second, but let's talk about Vardamir's name. Vardamir means exalted jewel, and you can hear in that Varda, right? So that's it's probably a name in tribute to Varda, but perhaps also a name given from his father to show love for his firstborn. He also had the name Noliman, which is a sobriquet, likely meaning learned one, and he was very interested in the lore of elves and men. And you can kind of imagine, right? He's the heir apparent for most of his life, so, you know, he's able to spend time, like, learning about the learning from his father, right, and learning the lore of both elves and men, which Elros would have known both, right, as being the son of Arendil and Elwing. And there's a theme here that we'll explore later that comes back at certain times in the story of Numenor, that some kings were only interested in learning, right? So was this a good thing or a bad thing? You know, on one hand, I think Tolkien might say, you know, that there's a lot of virtue in being a man of, like, of letters, a man of study, you know, these kinds of things. But there's also obviously a need for people, you know, for some to be people of action, men of action, people who are also interested in ruling, right? And not for their own power's sake, but for, you know, for the sake of the common good, for the sake of the people that they are called to rule. So anyway, this is a theme that will come back, and it's, you know, that this idea that these kings have different temperaments, and some of them are kind of scholarly rather than, you know, what you might think of as sort of the temperament to be a good king. Interesting theme that, you know, again, we'll come back to. And just to make sure this is clear, it became a custom for kings to freely yield the scepter to their successor before they died, right? And we see this because Vardamir willingly gives this to his son, Amandil, right? Tar Amandil. And so even though Vardamir is listed as the king for 1 year, it's almost just a symbolic gesture, just to say, like, you know, yes, he was the next in line, and then Amandil is the grandson, right? The grandson of Elros. But it's important to emphasize, because this will change, that the kings weren't always interested in hanging on to power, and understand the significance of that, right? It's the giving away. Think about this theme just in all of Tolkien's writing, how important that theme of being able to give away something that's powerful in The Lord of the Rings, right? Tom Bombadil, he's not affected by the ring, right? He freely takes it and gives it back to Frodo like it's nothing, right? Faramir, right? Faramir has this great example, whereas Boromir wants the ring and tries to, is willing to kill Frodo to get it. Faramir doesn't, right? Faramir is, has the opportunity to take it, but doesn't. Okay. So, you know, we see this theme recur again and again, the willingness to lay power down, right, when it's the right time to do it, the willingness to be detached from that power, even when it's given to you, right? Very, very important theme all throughout the history of Middle-earth. All right, so let's talk about Tar Amandil, the third king of Numenor. He rules from 442 of the Second Age to 590, so a 148-year reign. He has two sons, Elendil and Arendur, and a daughter, Maeren, maybe. later... This is really interesting. Later, Amandil would be the name of Elendil's father at the end of the Second Age. So, Amandil and Elendil are the names of the two characters, right, that are kind of like the founders of, if you will, of the realms in exile, Arnor and Gondor. Of course, if you watch The Rings of Power, you're familiar with the character of Elendil there. He is the father of Isildur. And these are very important figures later on as well. So these are important names, and they harken back. Yeah, these names get repeated much later in the history of Numenor with two very important figures. Amandil means lover of the blessed realm, right? Aman, blessed realm, and Dil would be lover. Okay. And Tar Amandil abdicates in 590 and turns over rule to Tar Elendil, his eldest son. Tar Amandil dies in the year 603. So that is the gist of our discussion from the fall of Numenor, or just for this week. So, you know, pretty short sections. I decided to bundle these two because they were so short. Coming up on the next one, we've got a little more action going on, a little more intrigue as we see Sauron begins to stir again in Middle Earth. So that's pretty exciting. Looking forward to reading about that, discussing that more. And it won't be long until we're getting into one of the most interesting parts of the Second Age, which is the story of Aldarion and Orendis, which is one of the only like true stories that Tolkien wrote. Like if you think about it, like as like a full kind of let's look at a particular time in the history of Numenor and like really go into a long story. So we're going to learn a lot about one of the kings of Numenor and about his life, and we'll have a lot of opportunity to talk about how that's significant to the history of Numenor as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up in this series, you guys. I'm really looking forward to it. All right. Hey, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. Tolkien Road, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. If you're a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. Let me read a recent one here, and then we got an awesome 5-star review. Always like to dive into these when I can. So this is from Caroline04. Edifying, 5 stars. Love listening to this show. It's not just a break from the chaos, but I'm actually learning ways to remain grounded in the chaos. That's awesome, because like, let's face it, things are so chaotic these days. I know my life can be chaotic. That's why I only got one episode out in the month of April, because life was so chaotic. But hopefully, in the midst of all the chaos, you know, each of us is able to feel a deeper presence, to feel a deeper peace. And I know that for a lot of us, reading Tolkien, thinking about Tolkien is one of those ways in which we can, you know, find a little bit more peace. So I really appreciate your comment there, Caroline. Great comment. And thank you for leaving a 5-star review of the Tolkien Road. Speaking of comments, wanted to read a few comments from one of our patrons, Wordy. And this is in response to our recent Easter episode. And I just thought this was a really, really cool little note here. So Wordy, this couple of comments in this thread. Wordy says, great episode, and in relation to Christ retaining his wounds after the resurrection, brings to mind Professor Ransom of the C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, who Tolkien is based on, or is based on Tolkien, retaining his wound after his resurrection upon returning from Perelandra. Yeah, great point there, Wordy. Wordy goes on to say, also, just realized the timestamp on episode 333 was 33 minutes and 33 seconds. Love that little touch. Well, this is what's really cool. I did not mean to do that. That was totally unintentional. In fact, I didn't even realize that was true until you brought it to my attention, Wordy. But hopefully everybody kind of gets the point there. Easter, right? Christ rises on the third day. We intentionally chose episode 333. This is cool. I wouldn't say we planned that out, but it was kind of like, well, this is cool. Like, it's going to line up this way. So we noticed the episode 333 part, but had no idea that it actually ended up being 33 minutes and 33 seconds. That's completely random. Although I have a feeling that even though it wasn't planned by me, it was planned by somebody else. When I think of that, when things like that happen, I like to call them God winks. You can call them Iluvatar winks if you will. It means the same thing. Really important number, and Wordy goes on to make that point. Most people, the tradition is Christ was 33 years old when he passed at his crucifixion, and then 3 days later, he rose again from the dead, right, with the resurrection. Yeah, so just really cool little note. Great catch there, Wordy. I'm glad you did, and thanks for bringing it to our attention. All right, you guys. Well, that is it. Please keep that correspondence coming. Hopefully, going to keep doing a little bit of that at the end of each episode. Got a lot of great stuff in the backlog there, but please do keep it coming. Thanks to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Melkor27, KG, Emilio P., Jonathan D., Mike M., Robert H., Paul D., Julia, Wordy, Joe Bagelman, Richard K., Matt R., Matthew W., Garrett P., Chris K., John W., Eugene D., Chris B., Daniel S., Seb M., Shayna Supreme, Corey C., Ms. Anonymous, Andrew T., Redhawk, Shannon S., Brian O., Zeke F., James L., Chris L., Azia V., Ish of the Hammer, Teresa C., David of Pints with Jack, and Eric B. All right, you guys. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening. We will talk at you next time. Bye-bye.